Kia ora, and welcome to a special guest edition of the New Zealand Property Market Podcast, brought to you by CoreLogic, produced by Agents TV. I'm Nick Goodall, Head of Research for CoreLogic, and today, to coincide with International Women's Day, I'm joined by one of the most impressive female leaders I've had the pleasure of dealing with in the industry, Amanda Young, who is Head of Third Party Banking at ASB. Amanda, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for your kind words.
No, you're very welcome. It's great to have you on board. I know it wasn't an easy thing for you to say yes to, so I appreciate that. Look, let's kick things off with a bit of background information. I think, tell us all about Amanda, the person, what keeps you busy outside of work as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. Look, I'm a Wellingtonian born and bred, and I think I've been really lucky to be able to stay in Wellington throughout my career, which has been cool. I live in Petone. I have three kids, two grandkids, and two giant German shepherds that keep me very active. I think from a career perspective, I had my son really young. And so I went straight into the workforce with BNZ. I was working as a teller, actually, in Wellington branch at the time, just underground there by the food court. And when I moved into the area manager role, I had three young kids by the age of 25. I've worked at Cigna Insurance, leading their outbound contact center. I mean, this role gave me a huge amount of opportunity to travel around Asia, which I really loved. I've worked at ANZ, leading performance and business development across retail and business banking. And now I'm at ASB, where I've been for almost 10 years. I was the regional manager of the Midland region for most of this time. I spent a year in the head of role building out ASB's business development muscle. And then I've been head of third-party distribution for just over 3 years now.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, yeah, it's an incredible experience, I suppose, throughout that time in banking and finance. And can you tell us more, maybe about more recent particular highlights you can share of things that you've really enjoyed being in that industry?
Oh gosh, yes, almost 30 years when you add it up. Time goes incredibly quickly. I have a couple of highlights that spring to mind. More recently, what we've achieved in third-party distribution over the past 3 years. Three things for me. One, in July last year, we brought all advisor-originated small business lending into my team. Now, this was very much off the back of it being raised as the biggest pain point for advisors in my first 2 years. So it's really cool to be given the opportunity to own it, take responsibility for it, and fix it for our advisors. The second piece, in October last year, we combined third-party banking and what we call advisor home loans. So that's the AIA Go Home Loans and NZHL to create third-party distribution. So now outside of rural and commercial, we actually look after everything that comes in from the advisor channel. I mean, the key benefit here is to really deliver a consistent experience, I think. And over the 3 years, we've grown the team from 30 when I first started back in December 2020 up to 150. Now, this includes new BDMs across the country to support advisors, new national manager roles that we've just recently put in place in December, and they look after our lending hubs, BDMs, and operations. And that's a significant investment, right? You know, in terms of lobbying internally to be able to get that amount of resource and get everything across the line. So I'm pretty stoked with where we're at, but still a lot of work to be done. There's always stuff that we can continually improve. I think just quickly, the other highlight would be when I was nominated by my team for an ASB Leader of the Year award in 2016. I went on to win ASB's Leader of the Year for New Zealand, and in fact, the CBA Group Award for Service that year. So that was cool. I mean, a result of a huge amount of things that we worked on, but primarily within my first 18 months with ASB, being able to take a non-performing team and turning that around. And we became the highest performing region in retail banking at the time and stayed in the top three for the 6 years I was in the role.
Amazing. I mean, that's just no surprise to me, given the feedback and interactions I have with you and your team as well. On the size and the growing team and depth and breadth probably of you guys, what you take care of, is that just a reflection of how much the advisor channel has grown over that time as well? Or is it also a strategic call from ASB to put more into that?
I think it's a reflection of the business that advisors are doing with us and the value that ASB places on this particular channel and the value that advisors add.
Yeah, and I think that's come about as well from more and more people seeing that, you know, advisors are a very valid way of going and getting advice and information about what to do when you're getting a mortgage too. So it's probably that mix, and that, like I say, the extra work from ASP. And then tell us more about that current role. Can you elaborate on kind of where you and your team fit in that mortgage lending process? So for you and I, it makes sense, you know, being between that the advisors. Yeah, and what sort of drives you to do a good job within that role?
Yeah, good call. And it's quite simple. I mean, I think third-party distribution is a big part of the puzzle for ASB when it comes to home ownership. And how it works, just to put it really simply, obviously, customers choose to engage with an advisor. The advisor submits an application into ASB. We have a team of assessors that process these applications and provide a decision. We also support all operational requests from advisors, that includes restructures, interest-only requests, etc., throughout the life of the loan. But for me, I mean, buying a home is the biggest thing you can do in your life, and our advisors play a critical role in that whole home ownership journey. My team and I work really closely with our 16 head groups, and we have 1,800 ASB accredited advisors across the country that we work closely with as well. As head of third-party distribution, I think a key part of my role is to remove pain points for my people and for our advisors. I have a voice at the table within ASB as an advocate for the advisor industry. This enables me to influence change, deliver better outcomes for customers, and better experiences for our advisors as well.
Yeah, okay, that'll make sense. And then, so from a broader ASB perspective, how does it fit within the broader ASB strategic goals?
Yeah, ASB's purpose is accelerating progress for all New Zealanders, which reflects everything we stand for at ASB. Progress specifically is grounded in our whakapapa, and our purpose has three strands woven together. The first strand is financial progress, so how we help New Zealanders, their whānau, and businesses get one step ahead financially. The second strand is social progress, so how we aim to make a difference in our communities. The third is environmental progress, so how we help build a more climate resilient future that's really good for the planet. How we fit in is we work with our advisors to bring that Kiwi dream of owning a home to life, right? So it's really tough navigating home ownership in the current environment with increased cost of living. I mean, customers are rolling on to higher interest rates. There's just a wave of regulatory change that will just continue to come through. At ASB, for example, 68% of our home loan customers have moved on to a significantly higher fixed rate. So that's up in the six and sevens. This means we still have 32% of our home loan customers that haven't felt the pinch of those higher interest rates yet. And I think the role our advisors play in providing these customers with the right guidance and advice is really critical in the current environment.
Yeah, I totally agree. And obviously, that's something that we're pretty close to and looking at all the time to understand, you know, what might come in the market and how much pain that could cause and what that might do for, you know, property transactions, for property values and the like as well. So it all kind of lines up quite nicely. And I like some of the, you know, ASB taglines. I suppose all good corporates have those. And, you know, CoreLogic House is helping people build better lives. And there's so much, I suppose, alignment with those as too. And we're about, you know, giving that information to people to make those smarter decisions. And there's probably similar strands that go throughout the banks for that as well. All good. And then from a broader perspective, obviously someone that's been at ASB for a while, moved into different leadership roles, how have you sort of seen ASB support you and other women in that leadership growth that you've gone through?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this with today being International Women's Day. I must say I am spoiled for choice at ASB when it comes to inspirational women that I get to work with every day. Thinking about women in leadership specifically at ASB, I mean, we have a women's influence network who work across ASB to enable women across the business to reach their full potential. Our signature program is Mentor Me. Now, this is a formal women's group mentoring program. In fact, I did it last year, and it was a fantastic opportunity for me to network and connect with women leaders right across the organization, very different parts of the business. So it was a great experience for me. We, of course, have diversity, inclusion, and belonging networks, obviously aimed at building an inclusive culture for all genders. But in fact, many of our women lead and play a really key role in these networks. And I think this is key to empowering our wahine at ASB.
Yeah, just creating those opportunities, isn't it, where you're all together and encouraged to talk about your experiences, right? Because I think in the past, you know, maybe women wouldn't be more forthcoming with talking about their experiences or asking questions or asking for help. So ensuring that there are those tailored groups is I think a key part of that. So that makes a lot of sense. And you talk about inspirational women. I mean, I was at a breakfast with Victoria last week and she spoke about productivity of New Zealand businesses. And I know ASB is doing heaps in that too. So, you know, that kind of speaks clearly to, I think, the importance of, you know, the banks themselves to trying to create a better economy, a better New Zealand. And of course, at the same time, the work that she does to just, you know, be such a strong and vibrant leader as well for other people to look up to. So I think it all kind of nicely comes together, really, doesn't it?
An incredibly intelligent and inspirational woman to get the opportunity to connect with on a regular basis at ASB. She's fierce, like fierce and in a great way. I think genuinely interested in everyone across the organisation, how things tick, so it's brilliant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can't beat just seeing it in front of you, right? So you're having a CEO like that helps a lot, no doubt. Cool then. Well, looking more at International Women's Day itself, is there anything particularly, you know, that jumps to mind when you think, what does International Women's Day mean for you? It's obviously been through a few years now. And I know the theme is inspiring inclusion, so I'm not sure if you've got anything along those lines as well.
Yeah, good call. I think what's interesting is growing up, I always thought it never mattered. It didn't matter if you were a man or a woman, a Māori or a Pākehā. It was always just about being the best that you can be. And so that was really instilled in me from a really young age. But what I found when I started working and as I have progressed in my career, there is a need to shine a light on the important issues that face minorities in the workplace. For women specifically, International Women's Day creates a really good platform for us to do this. I think in my role specifically, I'm consciously aware of how I connect, how I advocate for women leaders within ASB, how I recruit is important, how I develop my people, retain talent. What's interesting, an example of this in my experience when recruiting, women always ask for less money. And they never negotiate. Women also don't apply for senior roles because they don't think they can do it. There's a lot of advice and sort of direction and guidance around you can totally do it. But it's just one of those things that we face. And I think this presents a massive opportunity for women looking to progress or move roles. You know, just get in there and back yourself.
Yeah, I think I've heard the story, and it must have been from a survey or data that says, you know, a woman looks at a job description and says, I can't do 10%, so I won't apply. A man sees it and says, oh, there's about 10% I can do, I'll give it a crack. You know, and it's just that difference in mentality through years and years of experience and how that rolls. And I think also the influence of, you know, having time away, which generally the mother's done. You know, when they've had children, which the man doesn't have, so they get more progressive opportunities than the female might get through that too, which can look to hold them back because they just have periods where they're out of the market and they start to doubt themselves as well.
That also impacts retirement savings, right? In terms of taking breaks throughout your career to have children and what impact that has when you retire.
No doubt. I mean, it just must be so stunting to potential growth, right? Like you would have done, like you said, mid-20s. And you just can't get any momentum going, right? Because you're having, you know, these regular long breaks to bring up children, which I don't think anyone would doubt is also an important function of any family. So yeah, it's tough that one, that's for sure. No, that's really cool. And I think going back to really on the leadership perspective then, can you talk like what are the leadership attributes which you feel are most important for all people, I guess, but maybe in particular for women who, you know, maybe have an interest or an inclination to go towards leadership? What sort of attributes are they looking to create and develop to be successful?
I think there's probably three that stand out, and this is really important to really lift your thinking. Firstly, having a strategic mindset, because I think as you're moving through and progressing in your career, being able to lift your thinking from sort of operational to actually a little bit more strategic in the way in which you think and lead people. The ability to create that compelling picture of what that future will look like for people and that real sense of optimism through building good strategies and developing good plans that people really buy into and give them a real sense of purpose. I think that's key. The second one would be absolutely being consistent. And this it goes across all levels of the organization, to be fair. As a leader, you must be consistent and you must be approachable. So I used to play softball, right? So if you're familiar with the strike zone when you're pitching the ball, and I think for me, you need to have a leadership strike zone. So you can't be throwing balls as a leader. You can't be happy, up, down, sad, angry at all. You need to work within that strike zone. You can be all shades of busy, don't get me wrong, but that shouldn't impact how approachable you are or how you come across to others. The third piece is, and it seems really simple, but I think there's a real skill to this, is knowing how to build an effective team. So start asking yourself, how do you be a leader people want to follow? And how do you build a team people want to join? And it really starts with being known for building high-performing, highly effective teams where you enable and empower people to really thrive and be successful.
Well, yeah, winning an award probably doesn't go astray either. So you can take that one for sure. And anyone that knows me will know that I love a good sporting analogy. So we'll certainly take the baseball one. I'd probably apply it to cricket. You know, and right now we need to be more consistent with where we bowl to the Australians. But look, we won't go too in depth on that one. But I really like that. And I think consistency absolutely makes a lot of sense. I think part of your second one there, it's that storytelling, right? I think we're hearing it more and more about, like, one thing being able to think strategically and take that step back, take that time to look at the broader picture. But then it's about how you can articulate that too, to sell that to your people and to, like, say, external or clients or whatever it might be as well. So I think it's really interesting to hear the importance of that storytelling, which does seem to be coming up more and more from everything I see out in the market too. So I think there's some real consistency coming through with some of that messaging too, which is great. And looking back, you must have had some pretty good leaders over your time, mate. No doubt there'll be a couple of shockers in there. I'm sure we've all got plenty of those examples, but let's stick to the positive side of things. Is there any particular advice you remember getting from a particular leader that has really stuck with you through all these years?
Certainly. The best advice I've received very early on, in fact, when I first started out in leadership, was to always think and act like a contractor. So as if your contract could end at any time. And this means you must always look for ways to add value, like not a minute to waste. Every minute matters. So having this lens throughout my career has really given me, I think, a different level of urgency to what I do. It's a different way in terms of planning my time, how I prioritize my time, so that I'm always looking to work on the most important things that will always have the biggest impact, not just things. I think it's really easy to get sucked into BAU because in my role, it's a big role. There are a lot of stakeholders that I need to work with. But really just resetting myself and thinking, all right, what are the most important things that I could be doing and how do I do them well?
Oh, I love that. I mean, it is very much about not fearing for your job, because that's probably not a good feeling to be acting in. But I like that idea that you're a contractor, and so you need to always prove the value of why you're needed, not trying to prove the value of why they shouldn't get rid of you. You know, it's that flip side of that. So that's quite nice. And like I said, you know, the best that you can do for your own development, for yourself and for the business is to grow that business, right? You know, no matter who you're working for, whether it's a small business, whether it's yourself, or whether you're working for a large corporate, like, they're all driven by the same thing. So I like that a lot. And so, you know, given that's your maybe number one piece of advice you've taken on board, you would have molded that sort of thing along with all the other things and all those attributes you talked about that were important. How do you now summarize what you think it takes, and what advice would you impart to potential future leaders for how they can, you know, improve those attributes and get to that to then be, you know, a successful leader, in particular, you know, a female leader in the banking and finance space?
Yeah, good question. It's funny. I actually saw a short video on LinkedIn the other day of President Obama responding to basically a similar question, you know, what career advice could you give? His response was, just learn how to get stuff done. Like, he's seen people at every level who are super good at describing problems, incredibly sophisticated at explaining why things have gone wrong or why things won't work. But what he looks for is, no matter how big or small the problem is someone who just says, let me take care of that. And it's that people really project that attitude of, look, whatever is needed, I can handle it, I can do it, that the right people will notice. So I think that's definitely one that stands out for me and really resonates through my career. The second piece is, you own your development. Nobody else is going to make it happen for you. You know, when I think about progression, very early on in my career, I always had my blinkers on. I thought, if I'm a high performer in my role, people will notice. But what I have learned is, it's very much a combination of performance, image and exposure. So if you're looking to progress your career and be promotable, only 10% is actually based on performance. So being able to perform and deliver value on time is a baseline requirement. So all promotable people perform. However, 30% is based on image. So what are you known for? What is your personal brand, and what is the soundbite that people will use to describe you? 60% is all about exposure. So who are the people in your organization and more widely that really know who you are and have met you? So I think in terms of development, taking a wider lens on not just your own performance, but actually also image and exposure. And just the final thing, and this is a big learn from me over the years, is just the importance of self-reflection. So when your team isn't performing, or what you're doing as a leader isn't working, my advice is that you actually need to look in the mirror first before you start looking at others. So for me, the performance of my team is a reflection of my ability as a leader. And if things aren't going to plan, then I'm not doing something right. So it's about sitting back and really reflecting on what I'm not doing right to actually fix the problem. I think when you have that self-awareness to analyze your own performance and the impact that you're having when things aren't working, you'll really start to see a shift.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a couple of probably follow-on questions from that. I think the initial one, which is, you know, be able to do and solve things yourself. How do you make sure you can do that without taking on too much? Is there a problem with that if you're always trying to say, well, I can solve or I can do it? How do you manage that balance?
I think it's about surrounding yourself with talented people that can actually help you get the job done. Like, I can't do it by myself. I certainly can't. And in fact, there's been a number of times recently where big business problems have been presented to me and I have said, leave it with me, I'll get it done. Now, you know, on the surface, projecting confidence, and behind me, I'm like, oh my God, who can help me? And how can we get this done together? Because I don't have all the answers. So it's absolutely surrounding yourself with people who are talented, that support you and, have the skills and knowledge, different perspectives to be able to really add value. And
Makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great example, because I think that must happen so much. And then it is, you run off and go and talk to the people you trust that you can have those conversations with, and then figure out, you know, maybe you will arrive at a thing that says we can't do it, but we know where it can be or who we need to talk to. And then you can at least pass that back to the people. But I think that, yeah, the attitude of, you know, leave it with me is such a great one to start with. So I really, really value that one. Awesome. Well, I think that's pretty much us for today. Amazing chat. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. As I said earlier, I know this is not your usual thing. You usually sit in the background and let your team and deal with the brokers and whatnot. But I really do appreciate you for saying yes. So thank you so much. Any final thoughts, any final words before we close on, get out of here?
Look, it's my pleasure, firstly. Great to get the opportunity to work with you, Nick. I appreciate the work that you do. I'll just close out with a quote. I think the All Blacks have a saying, you can't have high performance without pain and suffering. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And I think for me, that's really a reflection of mindset. So wherever you are, whatever you do, it's all about having the right mindset, knowing where you're playing from each day. If, say, for example, the mindset scale is a 1 to 10, what sends you up the scale and gets you buzzing? What pulls you down and sort of gets you in a low space, and how you really manage this. And something I've learned again very early on, it's not what happens to you, but how you respond to what happens to you that people will remember you for.
No, that's really cool. And I think it comes back to that self-awareness, right? Like, you need to sit back and reflect a little bit, have that reflection, have that self-awareness, and that's the only way that you're going to ever advance, you know, as a person and then especially as a leader. So absolutely love that. Well, thank you very much once again. Just let me say thank you very much for listening. Please do get in touch with any questions that might have flowed from today, or any thoughts for future podcasts we could do, any future podcast guests. Please feel free to get in touch with me, and please be sure to go and download the latest Women in Property report, which is also out now. I'm going to say thanks again. My name is Nick. She's Amanda from ASB. You've been listening to the New Zealand Property Market Podcast. Happy International Women's Day. Mā te wā.